Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com.
John, Happy New Year to you, my friend. Great to have you back.
Steve, you too. Happy New Year. Hope all is well.
Doing great. And so you beat Holy Cross. So right now you're 1-1 in conference play. 1-1.
Correct.
If I were to have told you before the Holy Cross game that Williamson and Forrest are going to go 5-for-18 combined, I'm sure it would be like, oh, let's see what happens. But what does it tell us about the growth and maturity of your team that two key parts can have a combined 5-for-18 and you win the game going away by 12?
Yeah, I mean, to your thought right there, if you were to tell me that, I probably would have had that exact follow-up. We'll see what happens. But what it really tells me and our staff right now is that our group is building confidence in each other inside this locker room that we can win games in different types of ways. And I think when, you know, the one thing that we're building on, that we've been building on since October, is ultimately creating a culture that's not dependent on making shots in order to win basketball games. It's dependent on defending, rebounding, taking, and not turning the ball over. And we're getting there. You know, we just had a little bump in the road here at home versus American, but Holy Cross was a great showing for us in that we didn't shoot the ball particularly well, especially in the first 15 minutes. And from an attitude standpoint, we were very much locked in. I didn't see any, I would say, scared faces, as they say. Everyone was just in tune with staying true to who we are, and I was really happy about that attitude for 40 minutes.
You have Elvin Edmonds, and you have Josh Basco. Sometimes two guys that are supposed to be the lead guard and handle it, can they work together? What has allowed the two of them to work together in that backcourt for you?
Well, I think they're still figuring that part of it out. They both trust one another, and both of them can handle the ball as the primary ball handler throughout the course of the possession. So what's happened a couple times now in the non-conference in the last couple games leading into now the Patriot League is teams are pressing us. So having two ball handlers on the floor gives us a little bit more firepower going up the floor versus the press, as opposed to being on our heels. And now these two guys are still learning how to find each other on the floor, as well as be aggressive for themselves and include the rest of the group. You know, Elvin was hurt for a large portion of the non-conference, so these two guys playing together is something new for them in their careers, and they're kind of just learning each other, but at the same time learning how they can be impactful together as a two-headed, aggressive ball-handling monster and get everyone else involved.
All right, so the American game was a bump in the road for you, but you had to me it's something to overcome. Your stretch where you're not playing, I know we had talked earlier about how you grouped all those games before finals, but there's a long period of time where you don't play. What did it take for you to just to get back and get some rhythm again?
I mean, it didn't take much. I mean, we got right back into the swing of things with Radford, who's a really good team, and we played a good basketball game. You know, we played a good basketball game. Merrimack was a bad first 20 minutes, a good second 20 minutes, and then we play St. Peter's, who's 4-0 in the MAC right now, and we played a good basketball game then as well. And really what's happening a little bit, and it happened again the other night against American, is more the fact that this is just it's invaluable experience that this group collectively is gaining. You know, a great example of the inexperience right now that these guys are fighting to overcome is we just played our second game of the Patriot League versus American. Last year, the second game of the Patriot League, Rue Bijek, who's our starting forward, played 3 minutes, and Noah Williamson, who's our starting center, played 0 minutes.
Right.
Josh Basco, who's been our starting point guard, played 8 minutes last year. Right. So this isn't that long ago for these guys to have played 0 minutes. For sure, I make them aware, like, hey, there is a learning curve to this, so it's not all going to be perfect. But what happens sometimes in the stretch of these games is we're looking for answers, like from the staff, from the scheme, and the answers is just them playing with confidence, doing they do within our structure. And when they grab hold of that, the personality and the trajectory of this group will hopefully go in the direction that, as a staff, internally we think it can go. But until then, we're going to have some of these lulls in scoring, and then it's going to require so much physical and mental energy to make sure that the opponent doesn't score as well. And so you're seeing low scores for us in these first two conference games in the first half because we're not making shots that I think we're capable of making. But really, it just comes down to gaining this incredible experience and then trying to expedite a little bit the process and give these guys confidence that they actually have the ability to make the plays to win.
Yeah, it's seriously, the first class broadcast class was today for the spring semester. I talked to them about the first thing I said, the key to this profession's confidence. Well, that's the key to any profession, all right? And that includes being a basketball player, confidence. The two of you have both played American. American beat Lehigh as well. You'll get another shot later. This would be obviously a game where I've seen both teams live. So I've seen both Lehigh and you. When you look at a player like Higgins, a player I like, a lot of players on your team I like, but what about a guy like Higgins, a 15-point-a-game guy? You know, what does it take to defend a guy like that so that you would make sure that he's not getting 30, but he's getting maybe 10 to 12?
Yeah, I mean, they have a couple guards, which I'm sure, like you said, you saw them that you saw them live and personal. They're capable. They have guards that are capable of making plays, regardless of screens and any schematic situation offensively. So that always becomes dangerous. A guy like Higgins, what you have to do is make sure that his tummy, when he touches the ball, there's some level of discomfort before he gets it. Mm-hmm. And then when he gets it, he sees a crowd, and he's constantly feeling like there's no space for him to make plays. And, you know, being that he's a junior and they have other players that are very capable, you know, they're a dangerous team. They're a really dangerous team in our league. Brett Reed's been in the league longer than anybody to know how to get his teams playing well at the right time. But he is exceptionally good when he has guards that are capable of making plays, and right now they have a team that's capable of that. So it's going to be quite the challenge for us because I think, similar to us, I think versus American, a couple shots go in, a couple in timely stretches, the game might go a different way.
You win, yeah. John, how complicated are you systematically with your team right now? In other words, sometimes simple is what works. Sometimes complicated works. Where are you in that stage right now?
For us, you know, there's just a lot of things that we are working towards improving. So as it relates to the scheme, we're probably somewhere in the middle. When we're at our best, we're executing and making it look simple. When we're at our worst, we're overthinking and making the simple look complex. Yeah. That's the coach's way of saying is I just have to get these guys competent in their ability to execute anything that we have schematically. That being said, you know, some of the teams that we're playing have advantages from an experience and points per game standpoint in certain positions. So we just have to do things that will give us a little bit better of a chance schematically to win these games. And in the last game, for example, American has first team all league preseason big man, and we did a decent job of limiting his touches, limiting his ability to get the ball near the rim, and he hurt us down the stretch with two threes. But aside from that, we did a good job, and I thought that was because we kept it simple and just tried not to let him get the ball.
Right. No. Exactly. When you played, how much did coaches talk to you, like And how much do you feel like you have to talk to your players now? Different era, different way of doing things.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you find yourself talking to your players, just talking to them, not coaching them or lecturing, but talking to them more than you were talked to when you played?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I do think in today's world of high-level athletics, college athletics is high-level no matter what division you're in. There is a relationship element that's required. You do have to extend beyond the game. And to a certain extent, being that I'm a son of a coach, and Pat Flannery, who was the head coach here, they always went above and beyond, because at the end of the day, right, when you're a coach, you're here to impact lives positively. You got to do it beyond the lines outside of the game. But at the same time, you know, today's world is a little bit more built on relationships, and you have to get buy-in through trust, through sweat equity, and through conversation. And the conversation can't always be built around making and missing shots, because there's so much more to life than that, and that's kind of what's evolved. It's been part of the evolution of coaching, is you realize that life goes on, and you want to make sure that your players are prepared for when the ball or stops bouncing in this case, but also they trust you and they trust your intention, so that they can just completely buy in and you know, do what they need to do to help the team win.
I mean, you're a younger coach. I it's got to help you at least in some way relate to these players. As time goes, are you always going to want to make sure, are you going to be one of those that feels like he's going to need to have at least one coach that's younger, that's more relatable to the era?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I have three young boys, and because of their ages, I will be in tune with the trends of the younger world for years to come. And at the same time, you know, the non-basketball mind for myself is very entrepreneurial. So I enjoy learning about the world and the trends and, you know, all the things that are popular. It's a kind of a vice for me, and that's an advantage in this case. But at the same time, I also, from a coaching standpoint, my first job was the NBA video coordinator. So
that's
when
right,
it comes
yeah.
to teaching, I use video a lot, and I really – the video that I use is not always Bucknell basketball. Right. A lot of times it's players that our players can relate to, whether it be Kevin Durant, not necessarily making shots, more his physicality defensively that is completely underrated, or, you know, we have a European center. So you look at Jokic, for example, who's the MVP, but his change of speeds on his cuts on offense, you know, something that at least what I learned at a young age, if you wanted to be a good player, you would go out and work on your game, but you would watch the Michael Jordans and the Allen Iversons and, you know, Steve Nash, and then you try to replicate what you saw.
Right.
And the same goes now. I just use what I know in the world of video coordinator to present it in a fashion where hopefully our players can learn and try to emulate that on the floor.
Yeah, it's interesting because Jokic's name came up the other night because we were talking with Jalen Pickett, who's with the Nuggets. He said, here's the part video-wise you can't replicate. He said, Jokic has that face where you kind of wonder how much he cares out there. He says, there's nobody that competes, like wants it so badly that he does. And that's from a teammate saying that. So, it's
I mean, that's quickly noticeable.
Yeah. You could. Yeah, it's quickly noticeable.
Yeah, I mean, he carries a good persona, but in order to have the success that he's had, his attitude has to be so far in terms of the competitiveness that that's the only way he can be consistent. Yeah. Because ultimately, there is that intangible in sports, and especially in that world, having lived it and seen it, if you're not competitive, it'll show itself in times of adversity, but also when you need to be your most poised and confident self. And but for us, it's a way for me to teach, because I know all these players, all these high school kids in college, because they watch the NBA, but they only watch for the most part the makes and the Kyrie Irving – flashy finishes, but they don't watch Kyrie Irving spending 25 minutes a day dribbling the basketball and making mistakes. I've seen it. I've seen a pregame warm-up that's not the 20 minutes that you see on Twitter or YouTube. I've seen the mistakes, and I've seen how intense these NBA players are as it relates to improving themselves. So I try to just pass that along, and hopefully it sticks.
John, always a pleasure. Good luck at Lehigh coming up on Wednesday. Yeah. It's great to have you back on the show.
I appreciate it.
Thanks, John. John Griffin, the outstanding basketball coach at Bucknell. I'll tell you, so all you guys know, I've said it before. You guys hired a winner in John. You really did. You hired a winner in that guy. We'll come back. More in a moment. Pearls of wisdom from Todd. I'm going to assume the suit's out of the building.
Haven't seen him.
No wonder you seem so relaxed. Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.